Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
USDA releases another in a series of annual January surprises. We'll talk about the latest reports and much more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll check with Jeff Guider from USDA at NASS about the latest USDA reports. Our panelists in studio are Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Chris Quorum of Strategic Farm Marketing right here in Champaign, Illinois, and Brian Chastain of MarketWise out of Farmer City, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. It certainly appears by USDA numbers that rationing has not yet taken place in the corn market. The question is, why not? Chris Quorum.
Well, I think when you look at corn as far as the rationing, the report today, we had a $300 million increase in feed, and that made the usage numbers up to 12.95 billion bushels on a 13-bushel crop. If we have any weather problems at all, Todd, in this marketplace, I would think we would be having severe supply problems. Why that hasn't happened, I think a big part of that is non-traditional reasons, number one being funds. I think the funds are in this market. Last I looked, there's still 270,000 contracts long in corn, and I don't see those people going away. I saw a blurb the other day that the S&P index funds were talking about putting another $50 billion this year into commodities from what they did in 2007. So I think as long as those people are in and staying long, I don't know how that affects the rationing of corn as far as the price goes. I think the livestock numbers they seem to be coming down, so that may help booster it too.
Pete Manhart?
I think the livestock number was a surprise. I think the other things, crude oil prices have kept ethanol usage afloat. Back a month or two ago, people were talking about $4.75 to $5 would stop ethanol. Now they're talking $5.50 won't stop it. And then you've also got the dollar value down around 75, 76 cents. That's 60% of what it was 2 years ago. If you take $5 corn times 60%, people are still buying across the pond $3 corn, and to them that's cheap.
And Brian Chastain.
I don't think necessarily that rationing is really an issue right now. I think it's more of a scramble to make sure we've got acres next year. We've got projected ending stocks on corn of just over 1.4 billion this year, which is about two times what we were a year ago. And yet our prices are a dollar higher. We're going to get through this crop year with both corn and beans with not necessarily comfortable stocks, but certainly adequate stocks that we don't really have to ration it. So you look at historical price levels with the stocks we've got, it's really just an attempt to make sure we've got the acres next year. One thing that really scares me is if we do get the acres next year, and the American farmer has always proven to be one that would step up to the plate, all we have to do is look back at last year. There was a lot of debate about needing 2, 3, 4, 5 million acre switch, and many were doubters that didn't think we'd do that, and we actually saw 12 to 13 million acre switch. So I think the farmer's going to step up to plate, and the big concern is if he does step up to plate, we see the acres we need, either coming from hay ground, pasture ground, maybe a surprise to change the CRP setup and let some of that grain come back out. But if we do get to a point where we ration demand and we've got the farmer stepping up to the plate and providing the acres that we need, then we've got problems.
Let's take a look at some numbers, and we have a lot of them. Chris, you've got a comment?
Yeah, I was going to ask these other two guys. I'm not sure what they're hearing, but I just looks like ethanol is, with ethanol margins where they're at, I think that demand is definitely going to decrease. So that may help the rationing, part of this whole crop.
I would agree 100%. I deal with a lot of clients in Iowa, and there's many of these new plants that were coming online, and they were just busting a hump to get those things going. Now they're just... they're still proceeding, but they're not that urgency to get this thing up and going. And, you know, they can't go out anytime within the foreseeable future and lock in a positive margin, so they're not going to produce aggressively.
Well, I think one thing that you got to look at in the ethanol is that Congress did a mandate that said you will use X amount. And if states don't use that X amount, they will lose funding from Congress. So there will be a day when states will say, we need ethanol from you, just whatever it takes. We need it, or we lose funding from the nation, and that's in that mandate from Congress.
You know, part of that mandate is, you know, we're going to, by 2015, you know, increase that double what we're usage. Sure can't see that coming.
That's just on the corn ethanol.
Just on the corn ethanol.
Part of that mandate is for technology that's not even available today.
That's right.
From 7.5, well, that's the second half, but on the first part, it's 7.5 million gallon to up to 15.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of ethanol that has yet to be made, and someplace has to develop it in the near future. Let's take a look at some of the numbers that came out from USDA and from the Chicago Board of Trade this week. We'll start at the board on the floor. In the corn pit, the March contract, $4.95, the high, the low at 62, settlement price at $4.95, up 28 and a quarter from last week. December corn settled 5.13 and a quarter, up 26 and a half. We'll catch the oats very quickly. They finished at $3.36 in the March contract. Here's the way the USDA numbers looked on Friday morning when they released them at 7:30 a.m. Central Time. Corn market January crop production estimate. This is the final crop production estimate for the 2007 season. USDA now says farmers in this nation raised 13.074 billion bushels, or at least harvested that much. Last month, it was at 13.168, and the average guess was at 13.112. The average corn yield at 151.1 nationwide. That's down from the November estimate at 153. Here's the big one. The ending stocks number for the 2007-2008 year, now 1.438 billion bushels. The average trade guess, nearly 300 million bigger than that at 1.709. And USDA's December estimate at 1.797. Quarterly grain stocks in billions of bushels at 10.269. That would be the amount of grain that would be on hand at the end of the month of January, or at the end of the month of December. So those are the quarterly grain stocks report. So those are some of the numbers that we got from USDA. And that the number that we show, the 1.438, and we've talked a little bit about that. We talked a little bit about the livestock usage, up 300 million. Exports, did that surprise anybody that they didn't change exports at all this month?
There was talk ahead of time that they might, because as of last week, our year-to-date export sales on corn were about 50 million ahead of what the government had projected. Beans were up 5% compared to USDA projection of down 12%. The corn slowed down last week. It's not quite as much ahead of the projected pace. So there's potential for a future adjustment upward in those export numbers.
Yeah, I think the dollar was a little stronger last week, and that I think that's a one-to-one thing just about. I mean, as the dollar moves up and down, the dollar index, I think exports are going with it. I think that's a really, really big thing. And, hey, before anybody steals my thunder, I just want to say January 11th, 2008, mark your calendars, beans in the teens. So,
I think on the corn, too, the last two sales weeks weren't that great, and I think part of that is being blamed on the holidays. But part of it could be on the prices. But we saw a ton of new sales announced this week that will be, you know, in next week's projections.
What do you think it is? And I want to come back to the livestock just a bit. What is it about the livestock at this point that has kept it from contracting? And I think some of it's fairly easy to understand, because at least in the hog side, when you've got a hog market or hog production facilities that have been vertically integrated more than they have in the past, and their large facilities, they would be, tend not to consolidate their or contract their herds as often or as hard as producers might in the past. But I'm wondering whether you think that the development of larger middle classes in other parts of the world, and I'm thinking China in particular, would be one of the things that would be holding this market up and holding the livestock usage up at this point, or are there other reasons that might be available out there?
Well, I'm not a big heavy livestock guy. I do know that China has 8 to 9 times as many hogs as we do here in the U.S. And I also know, I just saw a blurb the other day, Todd, thought it was very interesting that the population of China, grade school population only, K through 6, is larger than that of the United States. So there's a lot of people out there, and they've changed their diet to that. Now, how that affects U.S. farmers as far as livestock, I really don't know. I'd hate to venture a guess on how that's going to effect, but I know that's what's bolstering our exports.
Well, the Chinese indeed do raise a lot of hogs. About half of the world's hog supply or pig meat comes from China or is located in China. How about that, rather, as opposed to coming from? I think it all stays there. Most of it's in one or two out in the back of the house. Frankly, there are some 400 million hogs that raise there annually, if I remember the numbers.
And how many farmers are there that each own one?
Yeah. Well, they've got, 1.3 billion people. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes. I just saw that.
Yeah, the numbers are staggering. I picked up one of my kids' books the other day, and if you lined up the Chinese population 8 abreast and marched them in front of you, it would never end due to the rate of reproduction, just perpetual going by.
But, I mean, they have, 300 million farmers?
More than that.
Yeah. 400 million?
Yeah, something like that.
But they also now have a 300 million middle class.
Correct. That was the point I was trying to get at, right. is they have it. They have a middle class that is as large as the United States is.
Right. Yeah.
Or bigger.
And it's really growing and developing. And, it's certainly a positive long-term for our product and demand for U.S. goods. But one thing that comes to mind is I had a conversation. It's been 10 or 12 years ago with a group of guys over dinner. And at that point, the topic of conversation was the Chinese and development and what it was going to do for the U.S. economy. And, here we are 10, 12 years later still talking about the same thing. So they've got a huge population. They've got a developing middle class. But at the same time, you don't go from a family that's used to having a pork chop or a steak dinner once a month to having one on the table every night of the week. So it's a gradual growth that we've got to see over time.
I think another big thing, Brian's come in on that, is I think you've seen in the last 2 to 3 years, our information out of China is much more believable. I think that they've opened up their lines of communication about their needs just incredible over the last 2 to 3 years. Before that, we really had no idea, how much grain they were holding, what their, if they were a 10-day supply of corn or 20-day, we had no idea. But
And they didn't either.
That's right.
Our USDA is trying to teach them how to know what they've got, and they literally still are not sure of what they've got, but it's better than it used to be.
Well, did I get you off on a tangent that may be wrong in terms of what's pushing this market around for corn and soybeans?
I think China's always lurking, but I think that there's, I think there's other things right now that's driving the market, and I don't think it's all China, but they are a definite help.
I think what it is the world is using more of everything everywhere, and we are using what we're producing, and as a result, it's demand led. And our worry is, will that demand stay if the U.S. goes into recession or if this, that, and the other happens. But right now it's demand-led by the world and the U.S.
And demand-led, and I suppose maybe that was the point, was that there are more middle class, whether they're here in the United States or in China or in other parts of the world. There are more people that have more money and are capable of buying agricultural products that are value-added, like livestock. And that, I guess, is maybe what I was thinking. It was keeping the livestock numbers in the U.S. at relatively large sizes, simply because United States is able to move through most of that livestock, and other places around the world are feeding livestock as well to feed their own populations.
I know Pete said that the R word there, recession. I just read a blurb today, too, that 48% of the trade believes we're headed for inflation. And so they're all going to be long commodities in that sense.
Let's take a look at some of the numbers that are coming in from other parts of the Chicago Board of Trade in the soybean pit today. Futures finished like this for the week. January contract, $12.96 the high, the low at 12.32 and three quarters. A settlement price up 37 cents at 12.86. November beans, $12.45, 84 and a quarter higher from last week. Futures finished that week up 84 and a quarter cents. The soybeans moving sharply higher along with corn and wheat on Friday. Pete, is there good reason to keep the soybean market on the uptick?
Usage. It's scary at these levels of where we can go and not stop usage, but we're competing, as Brian said, for acres. We need acres of soybeans also, and I think that's a big part of it also on the beans.
USDA says now in the ending stocks figure for 2007-2008 that there are just 175 million bushels left when we get to the fall. You think that number will ratchet down as we get closer to the fall?
It's hard to say. I mean, that's a snug number. We can deal with a little lower number, 100 and a half, 150. But the real debate is the acres, like Pete said. We've just got to have make sure we have acres next year. Talk is, I think, about 9 million more bean acres with a 43 bushel yield. With current projections, we're not going to build stocks. So we've got to have the acres and or good crop, and we can't take the chance of any sort of a hiccup due to weather or whatever.
And speaking of good crops, last year, USDA says in the January 11 report that farmers put in the bin 2.585 billion bushels. The average trade guess was 2587, and of course the November estimate was a 2594. Soybean average national yield now stands at 41.2, and it was at 41.254 in the last month. Not much of a change there, but we're still ramping things up in the bean market. And how do you see the acreage changing, if at all, in the United States, and where else might it come from?
I would have to agree with these two gentlemen that it is a crunch for acres, and I think it is tight. I think, you know, as far as where those acres will come from, I think they're going to come from the same place they came last year. I think that you're going to see, I think you saw a tremendous amount of wheat go out with the wheat price where it is, and I think you're going to see more double crop this year than you've seen in a long time. Now, granted, double crop is a yield drag. But I think you're going to see a tremendous amount of bean acres come following wheat this year.
And speaking of wheat, let's take a look at those. Well, go ahead, Pete.
I think part of it's going to come from that wheat shock of less planted acres out west in the hard wheat areas. What was it, over 2 million less than expected? And that in wheat country will probably mostly go to beans because of the worries about enough moisture for corn.
Yeah, so let's take a look at that number real quickly. The average trade guess for the hard red wheat for a number of acres that were seeded this past fall was 34.773 million acres, and the USDA said it was a 32.5. That's about the same change that they put in the all-winter wheat seedings at 46.61 million acres. That is up still from 44.987 last year, but the average trade guess was at 48.586. There weren't as many wheat acres out there as most had expected. Most of that came out of the hard red winter wheat in Kansas, and wheat futures rallied today on that. 934 was the high in the nearby March, the low at 878 and a quarter, settlement price at 909 and a quarter. They were down 22 and a quarter. July wheat at 806, off 11 and a quarter. You know, does it matter very much if the United States doesn't put, as you know, if it's a 2 million down in the United States in wheat acres, does that really matter very much on the global scheme? Don't we get enough wheat from the rest of the world that we don't have to worry about that kind of change?
I think, Todd, it's a world market on wheat. I don't think that that's I think that what you saw today limit up is just a total emotion of the market, total emotion, somebody looking to trade. I honestly believe that wheat will all be defined by the world supply when it's all said and done. I think we've seen a top in the wheat market. I think right now I think you better be putting puts on if you don't have your tooth.
There's a consensus. Everybody's shaking their head yes, is there, right?
I think the big thing about the wheat market today was 2 million less acres than expected, and that'll go to mostly beans. So that could have an effect on beans down the road, a couple million more beans.
We saw planting up 1.7 from last year, and wheat is a world crop. I've been told that the wheat is actually planted in somewhere in the world every month of the year.
Well, we'll find out as we head through July, which is the harvest month for wheat and whether it breaks. One final question for all three of you before we go and we get to the weather segment and we talk to Jeff Guyter of USDA NASS. What do you tell producers at this point when they're looking at such high prices for both old and new crop, corn, soybeans, and wheat? I'm going to say that you've got some ideas you're going to sell. But what are we doing with the other two crops? And, Brian, we'll start with you and we'll work our way across.
Well, my concern with a lot of producers, and they've all been reluctant sellers because everything they've sold up to this point, they feel they made a wrong decision, a bad decision, so they're really dragging their feet in some instances. And that's fine as long as we keep going up. But the biggest problem that many producers have is selling in a down market. The first question you always get is, well, don't you think it'll come back? And the problem is, if it doesn't, then it ratchets down a little bit more, and then it ratchets down a little bit more, and ultimately they lose everything that they had in terms of a run-up. So I think producers need to step into this thing and look at either forward contracting and buying calls. You can go out there and buy some cheap puts and protect, in many instances on corn, $200+ an acre as a minimum profit and leave the upside open. On beans, you can go out there and buy some relatively inexpensive puts and protect close to $150 or $200 an acre as a minimum profit and leave the upside open. And I said inexpensive puts, options many times are considered expensive. But if you go back and look at what we know as a more traditional market where we're spending 50 cents for a $7 or $7.50 put, that's 7 to 8% of the value. If you look at spending 95 cents for an $11.40 or $11.60 or $11.80 put, that's still relatively the same, 7.5%, 8.5% of the strike price value. So the options proportionately are still really not that high priced. There's a lot of dollars out there, but look at the levels we're insuring.
If you look at what you're insuring, a 5,000 bushel contract of beans at $13 is $65,000. That's about 100 acres at 50 bushel to the acre. At $6, you're talking $30,000. At corn, when we used to look at $220, $230, $250, we're now at $5. You're insuring $25,000 instead of $12,000. So that's what we're doing, protecting that price. And we're telling people similar things. If you've got cash left on the old crop, we'd be finishing up and buying calls. And if you're not going to sell and have got a lot to protect for old crop or new, especially the new, we'd be looking at buying 440 puts, 470 puts, protecting it somewhere between 4 and 450 on price at a fairly reasonable amount.
Well, I would have to say that it's been tough to get guys to sell, and a lot of those people think that they've left a lot of money on the table that have made early sales. When you sell $10 or $10.50 beans, I'm telling you folks, that's a good sale. Say thank you very much to the market and let it alone. I do think that you need to protect this crop with crop insurance too. That's buying a call and a put in the marketplace for a lot cheaper than you can go buy a call and a put. So I think those are all things to be thought about.
Time is passing swiftly here on the Commodity Week program for this week. USDA numbers released on January the 11th, so we're going to skip right through our normal run of the weather segment and talk with Jeff Guyter, who is the chief of the crops branch of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. It's a position he's held since August of 2006. Prior to that, he was a deputy director in the Florida field office for 13 years. Jeff, thanks for being with us today.
Sure thing. Glad to be on.
Tell me about this feed and residual usage number that changed so dramatically today for corn.
Well, that's getting into the area that the World Board analyzes. And, I can tell you how we arrived at our stocks numbers, but that's another area.
Well, why don't you go ahead and do that then?
Okay. When we estimate the stocks, we go to farmers and we go to the facilities, the storage facilities, and collect the information. So, we estimate that 10.3 billion bushels of corn and the 2.3 bushels of, billion bushels of soybeans, and turn those over to the World Board, and then they're the ones that juggle those numbers.
And let's talk about the numbers that you do use and that you do come up, which was the final numbers on the crop for this year. Those dropped in corn. Was that out of Iowa or other places?
Well, it was certainly Iowa's a big part of that, obviously. But Iowa, Illinois, all of those major corn states contributed to that. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I wasn't prepared to address that, so I can't tell you for sure. But I would say it's pretty consistent across those states.
And then, if you look across the numbers that were produced by NASP, what were the changes that you found most interesting in this last set of numbers released on Friday morning?
Well, for the acreage and production report, I didn't think there were too many surprises because throughout the year we had been forecasting, for example, a record corn crop, and we knew the soybean crop would be way down. And so I think the final numbers that we published this morning basically just confirmed that based on our December agricultural survey where we talked to farmers around the country. And so we fine-tuned the numbers a little bit. You mentioned a few little changes from the previous forecast, but I don't think it was a surprise.
And how much would you have had to do with the wheat seedings number?
Well, we do that that report as well, and we collect that information from growers around the country. And so that report was part of what we put out this morning, report.
And while I know you don't probably ask this, but is the thought that those acres in Kansas, the hard red wheat that dropped, would they go into soybeans or someplace else?
Well, that's the big question, and I guess we'll know by March when we do our March survey. But when we looked at the map and we looked at the states that increased and the states that decreased, it was pretty definite there in that hard red area where much less acreage this year than what we saw last year. And listening to the gentleman's comments earlier, I would imagine a good part of that would go into soybeans, but I guess we'll wait and see.
And what was the number that most folks in lockup wanted to talk about this morning beyond the $400 million that didn't show up at the end of the year?
Yeah. It was mainly that difference between the hard and soft areas that was very striking to us. When we get those indications from our state offices and the recommendations that they send in to us, we go over those pretty closely. And there were some phone calls before the lockup back and forth between us and the states making sure that those numbers were right. And I think, I recall right, Kansas and Colorado were both talking about a lot of acreage that were sitting idle because of the, I guess this past fall, the weather wasn't necessarily conducive, and some of their rotation patterns too, I think, allowed them to take that out. So that was a concern, but I don't think anybody felt like we were that it was wrong.
Jeff, we appreciate you being with us.
All righty.
Jeff Guider is with National Agricultural Statistics Service out of USDA. He's located in Washington, D.C. A very short final word from our analyst, and we'll start with you, Chris Corum.
Well, I just think that anybody out there, I think they need to take advantage of these prices where they're at. Probably if you were thinking about a trade, I'd probably be looking at some sort of a wheat corn spread and probably in the July. So I just think that you need to get some of this new crops stuff sold.
And Pete Manhart?
I'd be still dribbling out old crop or selling a lot if you don't have much sold, and I'd be looking at getting new crops sold up to 20-30% at these high prices and looking to protect with puts what you don't have sold. If you've sold and think it's going higher, looking at buying calls to stay in the market.
And Brian Chastain.
I think we need a game plan. If you want to sit and wait and let the market work higher, that's fine, or take the chance of the market working higher, but you need to have some definite target points and some trigger points. And you also had to need a plan B if the market all of a sudden decides to reverse, at what point you're going to give up and go ahead and step in and make sales. And you need to think about that ahead of time, because in the heat of the moment, it's many times very, very difficult to pull the trigger.
That's Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.